This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
I'm Charles Payne.
I'm Martha McCallum.
I'm Greg Jarrett, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, March 15th, 2024. I'm Chris Foster. 2020, now 2024, and again, Biden versus Trump. And if the vote were held today, if the polls are right, Trump wins this time, barely.
There is a segment of Trump voters that says, if he's convicted on a felony charge, I may rethink my vote. And in something this close, that could actually make the difference.
We're speaking with Fox News Sunday host Shannon Bream.
Elisa Brady, is a mental health crisis pushing parents away from parenting?
Our default must be with kids. You're going to be just fine. Because if they hear that, they're much more likely to realize it's true, and they're much more likely to develop the internal resources to make it true.
And I'm Olivia Krolchuk. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
There's a Republican caucus in the Northern Mariana Islands today, Guam tomorrow, and primaries for both parties in Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, and Ohio on Tuesday. Well, those people can vote for whoever they want. President Biden and former President Trump already have enough delegates to be nominated at their party's conventions this summer. Trump put out a video on Truth Social after going over the top Tuesday night.
Now we have to get back to work because we have the worst president in the history of our country. His name is Joe Biden.
There was a time Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was ahead of or close to Trump in Republican primary polls. Then he and everyone else went away. Only Nikki Haley hung on through Super Tuesday.
It is the legal trouble that it seems like helped seal the deal for President Trump. And he rightly predicted that it was going to help him.
Fox News Sunday and Living the Bream podcast host Shannon Bream.
What it forced every one of his opponents to do was to run to his defense every time there was a new round of charges that were leveled. So it really was kind of an impossible primary situation for everybody but President Donald Trump.
234 days till Election Day. A lot can happen. At the moment, it looks like a very close race again with former president. If you just go by the current polling, it looks like former President Trump, if you go state by state, it looks like he wins a very close race in the Electoral College, maybe by 10 or so votes. But again, I don't know what that means at this point, but it's interesting.
It is. And what's also interesting is, as much as we love to dig inside the numbers, there is a segment of Trump voters that says, if he's convicted on a felony charge, I may rethink my vote. And in something this close, that could actually make the difference. Now, whether any of these trials gets that far, gets to a conviction, and innocent until proven guilty, maybe he's never convicted on any of these charges, but that's a real political liability for him at this point. So for now, all the political gambles are paying off. His rallies are huge. His base is turning out. They see these not only as prosecutions, but persecutions. So it's working at this point for him. He's won delays in the cases he needs to win delays in. There are more to come. It's just such a tightrope act that he's walking, but he could walk it right back to the White House.
How's the money? You know, President Biden has raised a bit more money than former President Trump. Where is he there? Is the deficit enough to make a difference, do you think?
Well, there's starting to be chatter that it could be. You know, there are questions about, now that he's officially the guy, there's been this whole shakeup at the RNC. His daughter-in-law is one of the co-chairs now, Laura Trump. And she, as an individual, is a very sharp, smart person. She's a great advocate for him. But the fact that his family is now, in some sense, running the RNC, there are questions about whether it can pull together the money to also continue as PACs are helping him and others try to get across the finish line, because so much money has been spent on legal fees. And now when you're getting into a general election where President Biden hasn't really had to spend a lot of money on anything, he hasn't had really serious primary challengers, and they are excited. They feel like their coffers are full, that they're going to outspend Trump everywhere they need to. And the president himself is out there in these swing states trying to get it done on the ground, too.
I suspect that you may see a somewhat nastier tack from the Biden campaign this time around. Not that they weren't completely on the attack in 2020, but I wonder if it's going to get more personal, where you're going to see videos of Trump stumbling and bumbling over his words every now and then, and forgetting his words now and then, trying to just compare, like, hey, you're talking about me, let's look at this guy too.
I do think it's beyond political differences. I think it is very personal for these guys. The president does not love that Hunter has been drawn into a lot of things. He's very defensive of his son. I think he directly blames Trump for that. And so these guys have a lot of personal heat and venom between them. And I do think you're right that these campaigns, and because they have such a long general election campaign period, I think that there's just going to be more and more time for this to get uglier, and everyone's going to be way more bruised by the time we get to the finish line in November.
Turning to the Capitol, Colorado House Republican Ken Buck says not only is he going to just retire, he's not even going to finish his term. He's going to quit by the end of next week. That makes the Republican majority even that much smaller. They can now only lose two votes if everything goes party line from now on.
As if the speaker did not need more headaches. I mean, trying to herd the cats is always difficult. But when you only have a couple cats that are in play every single time, and you've got a larger number of cats who don't like anything that you're doing, even though you're in the same party, really difficult. I mean, the Democrats had to do this with the progressives, with the squad, trying to keep everybody on the same page is really tough. And so you've got factions, of course, within the Republican Party who were demanding that when it comes to spending and the border and everything, that Republicans are rolling over if they don't get everything they demand. But when you only have a two-vote leeway, it is really difficult.
There is chatter that more resignations could be coming. Is it possible that enough Republicans, and it won't take many, enough Republicans are sick of their jobs that they would actually allow their party to become the minority in the House?
I think there's enough of loyalty to the party that you don't lose a couple more and wind up in the minority. It also gives them enormous power to try to extract things from the speaker, from others in leadership when they're unhappy. So really tough problems for the GOP all the way around. But I don't see them giving up, you know, seats that would leave them with nothing to cling to that the GOP controls in Washington.
There was a special election for in New York for a seat that was occupied by Brian Higgins, a Democrat. Now, that's April 30th. If Democrats regain that seat, or, you know, take another Democrat wins that seat, and then it becomes even smaller. Then it becomes 218 to 214. And that could hold until this special election for Buck's seat comes up in June. There's some intrigue there. Explain the whole Lauren Boebert situation. She's not happy.
I mean, there are so many nightmare scenarios for Republicans. And she has been a firebrand, and she has had plenty of controversy. And the voters out there seemed not as enamored of her the last time around when she had to run again. So, you know, all of the timing of this and Buck leaving and her district changing creates all kinds of new headaches for the GOP. So can they pull it together and keep it together through the summer? Now, none of us think they're going to get major legislation done, but they do have to get things done, like funding for Israel, funding for Ukraine. They have to make decisions on those fronts. They're not going to get a big immigration bill done no matter what happens with these special elections, but they do have other stuff they've got to get across the finish lines, including those appropriations bills, too.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., back in the news this week, running as an independent now. He was a Democrat. He is a Democrat, but he's running as independent. There's talk of him choosing New York Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers as a running mate. Now, at first, wow, that seems weird. But then you think about it, why not? I mean, they're both famous guys. They're both sort of politically off-center with some provocative views. It might be a good match.
It might be. And, you know, if RFK Jr. alone, the Kennedy name, wasn't enough star power for you, you bring somebody in like Aaron Rodgers, who, again, very controversial. People love or hate him. And I got to say, when I watched, but you know, they do the preseason Hard Knocks thing with whatever, with the NFL teams. And I watched Aaron Rodgers. I was like, huh, this guy is more likable than he's been portrayed in the media. Now, I think most mainstream media hates most of his positions, and you know, I'm not defending any of them, and I don't know all of them, but he has a certain following that is really into him, and it would definitely generate star power for the ticket. But the question is, does it become too much of a gimmick? I don't know. We got a couple weeks to wait and find out.
Shannon, the TikTok vote to ban it in the House if it's not sold by its Chinese ownership was not close, 352 to 65. I wonder if this classified briefing the other day, the day before the vote, convinced more people that TikTok is a national security threat.
Well, think about it, coming out of committee 50 to nothing with this fully bipartisan vote. Like, nothing gets out of committee 50 to nothing, even like naming a post office. I feel like you got 49 to one, like there's somebody. So there is very serious alignment on this. But you do have critics pushing back, including on both sides of the aisle, who have real questions about the longer term implications of the government getting to make decisions about which social media platforms do and don't survive. I mean, those are real questions the far left and far right have. But the fact that this thing is barreling to the House floor, gets through there. And it's interesting to me that President Trump, you know, he gets credit or blame, however you look at it, for killing the Senate deal that was coming together on the border. But it's interesting that most people don't seem to be listening to him on this TikTok thing. The people who have had to vote on it so far are convinced there's got to be that divestiture. Not that you got to ban the app, but there's got to be that divestiture, regardless of what President Trump is saying publicly.
I mean, the people behind TikTok have long denied that we're a tool of the Chinese government party. They've said we've never shared user data from Americans with Chinese authorities. And if they asked us, we wouldn't do it. But there are plenty of people who say that, well, yeah, you're full of it. And that there is evidence that you've...
Well, and isn't it, and I'm no Chinese law expert, but this is the argument I always hear, is that by law, these Chinese companies do have to share their data. They cannot block it from the Chinese government. If that is the case, then ByteDance, who owns TikTok, cannot make that argument. So they may say, oh, it's stored in a different place and the Chinese government can't get to it. But my understanding is by law, the Chinese government has to have access to it. Now, if ByteDance can show that's not true, that's an inaccurate report, here's how we siphon and silo the information so it never gets to them, whatever arguments they've made on that so far have not convinced the people who've seen the classified briefings on this.
Any sense of where the Senate's going to go with it, if it'll even come up soon, or if there's momentum for a vote for or against or not a vote at all?
We'll see. But I've had senators from the left and the right, GOP, Democrat, on the show numerous times to say we are committed to getting this done in a bipartisan way. You've got Senator Warner out there chairing in the Intelligence Committee and working with Rubio as the ranking member. I've had a number of senators tell me we're doing this. Now, whether they really mean it, because it's sort of like the House has given them this vehicle, like, okay, do you mean it now? Sort of like when the GOP said we're going to repeal Obamacare, and then when they got the chance, they didn't. We'll see, because the Senate is now on deck, and they've been given a vehicle to get it done this time.
The show is Fox News Sunday. You can also hear Shannon on the Livin' the Bream podcast. Shannon Bream, good to talk to you. Thanks.
Chris, great to talk to you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. The summer of 1997 brought warm weather and good energy to the University of Kentucky campus. One August night, Holly Dunn and her boyfriend left a fraternity party to walk along the railroad tracks. Little did they know of the serial murderer who lurked in the shadows. This week, Holly Dunn joins me to share her story of the brutal encounter with the railroad killer, ultimately becoming the sole survivor of his attacks. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
This is Olivia Krolchek with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Parenting isn't what it used to be. Not only is there a constant stream of advice on social media, there's also a lot more awareness and concern about mental health, adding to the traditional trials and pitfalls of raising another human being. Though for some, the choices still boil down to old school basics or a different approach.
I would definitely put myself in the category of a gentle parent.
Lauren Simmons says she was a rebellious child with strict parents.
I found a lot of ways around, you know, rules, and versus learning how to be an empathetic person and think about consequences, I just became a really good liar and really sneaky.
She says she wanted a different relationship with her children. But Lewis Hunter, who also spoke to Fox 26 Houston, says he's controlling with his two sons and that parenting is a dictatorship.
Because right now, what I see in this newer generation is we've got a bunch of soft, entitled, emotionally driven children, you know, who are talking to their parents like their parents are wagging the tail.
Dr. Rina B. Patel, a parenting expert and positive psychologist, is concerned about parents burning out, telling Fox 11 in L.A.
Realize that when kids are watching you, they're also seeing that it's okay not to be superhuman, because we don't want that perfectionistic child either. We want them to know that it's okay to make mistakes.
The National Institutes of Health says nearly one in five children ages 3 to 17 in the U.S. have a mental, emotional, developmental, or behavioral disorder. That 2022 report also finding a more than 40% jump in suicidal behaviors among high school students in the decade before 2019, trends that only got worse during the pandemic. And this also means more kids receiving treatment for disorders. We've addressed some of these serious issues many times on this podcast. Today, we add a different perspective to the mix, as some parents try to navigate very challenging times with a more gentle approach to raising kids.
Gentle parenting has been a fad now for at least 20 years, and it's the therapeutic approach to parenting where kids' feelings are always front and center.
Abigail Schreier is an independent journalist and author of Bad Therapy: Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up.
And you're always soliciting a child's feelings, considering their feelings, and the parent avoids all punishment, tries never to say no, and instead tries to coax a child along through a series of options and consideration of how they're really feeling. I don't think it's particularly helpful, but if you go on the parenting chat sites where people have tried this and the kids get more and more and more violent, it'd be hilarious if it weren't also a little tragic.
Some people from older generations say we're definitely too soft on kids now. Others say some adjustments were needed, that parents were too heavy-handed in the past. Have we just gone too far in the other direction?
So there's actually incredible research on this going back to the 1950s. It's put out by a woman named Diana Bomarend, and they have repeated her studies over and over. These are the very replicated studies, so they're very sturdy psychological studies, finding that parents who are authoritative but loving, have clear rules but are loving, their kids have the lowest rates of anxiety, least depression, they're happiest, and they are most connected to their parents in terms of, you know, they feel a lot of love for their parents and tend to be pretty successful. So that is actually what the research shows. Now, what's popular is very different. What's popular is to say that all punishment is cruel, that high expectations are too demanding, and that all of it is authoritarian and somehow backwards and causing children emotional trauma. It's not true. It hasn't been true. And unfortunately, it's not helpful that we're putting this really untrue message into the parents to undermine their confidence.
My grandmother used to always say, discipline is love. And I mean, there are varying degrees of discipline, obviously, but that seems to go, you know, along the lines of what that research is saying. How has parenting changed over the generations, and how much of that has to do with life in general changing, both parents having to work, for instance?
You know, I really think our attitudes changed largely because we decided, you know, Gen X went into therapy in greater numbers than themselves than previous generations, and they liked therapy for themselves. And they started worrying that they had emotional trauma of various kinds, and they became determined to make sure their kid never had any distress. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing this dramatic overcorrection in which kids are tried to keep in this happy state. We're trying to keep them in a permanently happy state at all times. And these kids have now grown up. They have almost no, you know, ability to get past any discomfort. And they're always considering their feelings, and it's making them miserable.
I know in the course of your own research and in writing your book, Bad Therapy, you've spoken to many families, kids, therapists. Your book raises a lot of questions about how kids are being diagnosed and treated. Are you skeptical of the basic premise that there's a youth mental health crisis, or just about the way it's being handled?
It's a great question. So there are basically two crises going on at the same time that we might be talking about. One is the very real crisis on our streets. Right? We have an underserved, undertreated population. There's no doubt. And some of them are very young, but they absolutely need serious mental health care. And we have also kids with things like severe anorexia who absolutely require treatment. But then there's the larger cohort, and they're getting the vast majority of our resources. These are bummed out kids. These are worriers. These are kids who are a little to one side of the general, you know, spectrum of humanity. They're not enough to actually have a serious disorder, but nonetheless, they're getting flooded with diagnosis and treatment, and it's counterproductive. It's making them sick.
What's your advice then to parents trying to make the right call on, you know, who to ask and what to do, especially when it isn't an obvious case of a child who's suicidal, for instance?
Right. So number one, parents need authority because they won't be able to make any of the changes in their kids' lives until they have they're comfortable exerting their own authority in the home, which doesn't mean being cruel or unloving. It just means I'm in charge and I know what's best for you. Then they need to go in and subtract all the things that are making kids miserable, like the too much social media, like the constant neurotic monitoring we're doing of their every move, never giving them independence, never giving them chores. Kids need to feel competent in the world. Right now, they don't feel they can make a difference in the world. And we're not giving them skills. They need to take risks. They need dangerous play. It makes them stronger and more confident that they know what they can handle. A walk home from school or from the school bus, those things are really good for kids. It makes them feel competent. It makes them feel that they can handle a certain amount of danger. And they need extended family, people who love them and they love back over time, not hired monitors, you know, the supervisors hired by mom, the coaches who are there because they're being paid. I mean, people who love them and love them and they love back over time. That's so good for kids. Another thing is telling them what their own parents and grandparents made it through. They need to know that they come from strong stuff so that when they face adversity, I want them to think I can get through this because here's what my grandparents went through.
I have to back up for 1 second, though, to the phrase dangerous play, in case anyone doesn't know what that means.
Yeah, sure. What that means is don't run to stop them from climbing on a boulder because they might scrape a knee. What that means is teach them how to use sharp knives and let them do it. What that means is let them walk home from the bus. You know, I'm not talking about anything terribly dangerous. I don't say, you know, to have them play in traffic, but they need to be competent in the world. If you never give them a sharp knife to handle, if you never teach them how to cook, if you never teach them how to do for themselves, they're going to feel like they're acting. I mean, I call it a veal calf life. They're terrified of the world outside the cage. So they never want to leave the cage.
Social media isn't only tough for kids to navigate in terms of challenges. It can be tough for parents too. Difficult moments, perhaps taken out of context, can be recorded and go viral. What effect is that kind of public scrutiny maybe having on parenting as well?
You know, I love that question because of all the things that kids that we all evolved to handle, we didn't evolve to handle the dangers of social media. No, none of us has adapted to being humiliated by a million people. Okay. So I think it's easy. That's a case of subtraction. And we've known it. And parents have known this for years. What they haven't gotten is support. We have known for the last 8 years, at least, since Jonathan Haidt and Jean Twenge first sounded the alarm about this, that social media is not good for kids. We need to get it out of the schools. We need to get it out of their lives. And I think, you know, that's almost a no-brainer. It's so important.
Is there any chance that gentle parenting, or at least some of it, is a facade that's happening, you know, and maybe parents are a little bit harder at home than they are in public in terms of being more authoritative at home?
I don't think so, because parents, when they report, say, you read any of these or you talk to gentle parents, but also you interview them. They often tell you, I tried really hard never to say no. But I think here's where I think you're right. I think because it's such a disaster and doesn't work, then you have parents who lose their tempers with the kids. And that's the worst case of all. Sending a child calmly to his room because he has just hit his little sister, okay, is not cruel. But when you get to the point where you have lost your mind because the child's getting more and more violent and aggressive and disobedient, well, that's not a good place from which to make a decision about, you know, what the kid's, you know, punishment or consequence should be.
What happens when you do get to that point? If you get to that kind of worst case scenario, is that a more appropriate time to seek some outside intervention?
I trust people who have raised good kids to adulthood. not the so-called experts. We never know, you know, very rarely do these parenting experts show you the people that they have raised with all their wonderful skills and tactics. But ask adults, they're all around us, who have raised good adults, people to adulthood, load-bearing walls in our society, people you can depend upon to show up for work, not claim they need a mental health day off, people who are solid spouses and parents. You know, anyone who has raised a good adult, I'd ask them for advice. But these parenting experts, I'd really keep away.
Is there a one-size-fits-all type of model for parenting experts, you know, guidelines that various experts do agree on, along with people who've raised good kids to it? You know, is there a sort of a common denominator here, and what determines whether a parenting trend, you know, sticks or not?
So what determines if a parenting trend sticks? It seems to be social media. But what actually is good for kids? Authority is really good for them. Independence, focus on things outside of themselves, feeling part of something greater, feeling part of community of people who love you and love you back. All that stuff is wonderful for kids. It's not a series of hacks and tricks, and it doesn't put the kids' feelings center always. And that's the key. It's not that you never consider a child's feelings, of course, or you never consider that a child might actually need an intervention, a psychological intervention, or even a medication. It's that it shouldn't be our default. Our default must be with kids, you're going to be just fine. Because if they hear that, they're much more likely to realize it's true, and they're much more likely to develop the internal resources to make it true.
Abigail Schreier, independent journalist and author of Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
Staff members at the Richmond Wildlife Center in Virginia are going above and beyond to feed and care for an orphaned baby red fox that found her way into their care. They want to make sure the kit can be reintroduced into the wild someday and doesn't become imprinted upon humans. So they're doing their best to act like mother foxes. In a video posted to the center's Facebook page, Executive Director Melissa Stanley is shown wearing a red fox mask and rubber gloves while feeding the kit from a syringe. The kit sits on top of a large stuffed animal fox that's supposed to look like her mother. The post explains that they're also minimizing human sounds, creating visual barriers, and taking other precautions. The kit was less than 24 hours old when she was brought to the center in late February after a man walking his dog found her in an alley in Richmond. He thought she was a kitten. Wildlife Center staff looked for the kit's mother, but when they found the den site, the other foxes had been trapped and removed. So the staff have been taking turns feeding the kit every 2 to 4 hours, all while wearing the fox mask. The fox kit will eventually be transferred to the Animal Education and Rescue Organization in Northern Virginia, which has 3 other kits of similar age and weight. They plan to eventually release them all into the wild together. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
Today Healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Olivia Krolchek.
What's on your mind?
March is Women's History Month, and women are at risk of becoming just that. History. The most radical voices are pushing to erase women. And many of these bullies hold enormous power to force us all to conform. I know this firsthand. As a student at the University of Cincinnati, my gender studies class professor gave me a failing grade on a project proposal for using the term biological woman. Who knew that stating the truth is unacceptable in today's institutions of higher learning, places that once dedicated themselves to discovering the truth? Our education system is not just suppressing the truth, it is intentionally and actively attacking it. This isn't speculation. In an interview with the Cincinnati Inquirer, Professor Melanie Rose Nipper admitted that she had been using her position of authority to force students to conform to her progressive views for years. Misusing one's power is a textbook definition of a bully. Professors should be teaching the truth, not defining it. Nipper called my words exclusionary and contributing to heteronormativity. That might be true, and we can debate it, as we should on a college campus, but not while banning a truth. Men and women are biologically different. This assault on truth is bigger and stronger than individual professors using their classrooms as bully pulpits. Young people are hostage to the college degree system that makes or breaks the course of our lives, earnings potential, opportunities, and types of jobs. We're captive to it and forced to participate and pay for these degrees, which is why the progressive left installed diversity, equity, and inclusion courses as graduation requirements. That is how a chemistry major like me ended up in a gender studies class. DEI is a vehicle by which the bullies are trying to make women's history and make our existence no more than a feeling. The DEI concept is a shameless abuse of power and an unmistakable indoctrination system. The fact that I applied scientific concepts and was punished for it is clear evidence. And yet the DEI virus has infected schools across the country. The University of Michigan, Villanova University, Drake University, and the University of California system are just on short list. People who oppose this movement have been canceled, penalized, and attacked. I refuse to be silenced despite the power Nipper had over my future. After my story went public, I received a message on social media from a former University of Cincinnati student informing me that the exact same thing happened to him in 2007. That's why I joined Riley Gaines and her mission to encourage all Americans to speak louder. As an ambassador for the Riley Gaines Center at Leadership Institute, I have had the privilege to speak with students across the country to share my experiences and to encourage them to speak out against injustices related to DEI on their own college campuses. Every single one of us must speak up for our right as women to exist, or we will all be completely erased. Women are in a new phase of feminism, the right to be acknowledged for what we are. The assault on our existence is powerful and real. My message for this Women's History Month is this: don't give an inch. This is Olivia Krolchek, an ambassador for the Leadership Institute's Riley Gaines Center.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.